On the line, I've got Lani Puriri. Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron. How's it going this morning?
I'm enjoying the fine weather that we've been having, and we're going to keep having too. I've just done the forecast, and it's going through till near the end of the week before it starts to fall apart again.
Good. Well, let's enjoy it while we have it then.
Yes. Yeah, that's the best approach. Now, I always do the thing when we talk to you about sophrology and get you to quickly explain what sophrology is for any new listeners, because it's you're like the first sophrologist in this country, I suspect. So it's not.
Yes, I am. Well, you are. Yeah. The one and only.
Yes. It's yeah. it's a very Raglan thing to have the first of its kind in the country. So no surprises there, really.
Yeah, we're sort of an up and coming community, aren't we?
Totally. Yeah, for sure. So
sophrology. Sophrology is, I guess, it's one of those ology words where you attach a root word to ology, which is ology is the study of something, and so sophro is the balance of conscious harmony of mind, body, spirit, breath, and consciousness. So it's the study of your whole human structure. Who you are as a human being, and what makes you find strategies in the world to manage life in a peaceful, happy sort of way.
And so, where did it start?
It started in Europe, so France and Switzerland. The person that started it, his name is Alfonso Caicedo, and he was a neuroscientist, a psychiatrist. And he was trying to find ways to treat his patients who were suffering from PTSD. And he was just using, pharmaceuticals and electric shock treatment.
Oh, those good old days.
And things that weren't working. And he wanted to actually use whole person strategies. So he started talking with his colleagues in the science field. And then his wife was a yoga instructor, and so he started talking with her, and then they actually went on a sabbatical all across Asia, and he picked up all of the Eastern strategies.
Yep.
So he combined Western and Eastern strategies to create sophrology. So sophrology it grounds in the body. It's focused on biological values, meaning who you, what are your person, your human structure. Most people don't know that there's 11 systems of the body and how to be a friend to those 11 systems. And so it's all about valuing your biological being and then using all of the other structure of your human existence that you have, your mind, body, your spirit, your emotions, your breath, your consciousness, all of those things, to create a well-being for yourself.
It's interesting. So, I think this junction between or combination of Western science with systems from other cultures is quite a fertile area. I went to a workshop last week with a New Zealand guy who's he has a PhD in medical science, but is married to someone from Peru, and he's very excited about combining the Western science with some of the traditions, the sort of mental health traditions, basically, of the South American culture.
Mm-hmm. Indigenous cultures.
Yeah. So it is, that Western science is, I mean, we often talk about it, maybe it's gone a little bit too far into our heads, and combining it with other traditions has proved to be very fertile, certainly the case of sophrology.
Yeah, I mean, that was his whole point back in the early 60s, was to create something that brought in the whole human structure, because even in nature, if you look at nature is a combination of science and metaphysics, right? There's energy that we can't see and we can't, but then somehow it intertwines with science, with all of the gases and all of the elements that exist there. So you can't have one without the other. They both have to exist together, so you might as well use strategies that incorporate both.
Yeah All right, so and today the general topic you wanted to talk about was meditation. So why is this? We mentioned meditation quite a bit, but I think you want to sort of zero in on it a bit this morning, don't you?
Yeah, because that's actually, so the technique that we use in sophrology is meditation. It's actually what we call it in sophrology is dynamic relaxation exercise, because we're not just sitting. So most people who are unfamiliar and have never done meditation before will think of sitting in the lotus position with your palms on your knees,
yeah,
in a state of silence, trying to quiet your mind for whatever extended periods of time. And so most people will say, oh, I can't meditate. I've tried it. It doesn't work. And I'm like, yeah, okay. That's a limiting belief that you are immediately attaching to your brain and telling your brain that you're not even going to try this thing that actually is essential for your well-being. So in life, we continually have to change and transform. And that stresses us out because the brain is lazy. The brain does not like change and transformation. It likes to be in its space of lackadaisical rest, and doesn't let, because having to change and transform for the brain means exercise, work, you know, which in our daily life, like when you think about exercise and work, you just think about, oh, I don't really want to do that. I really just want to sit here and do nothing. Right.
Yeah.
So something might come up, where you might be triggered into feeling like you can be triggered into a stressful state and recognize, oh, I need to change this thing. Or you can just be, maybe you're in a motivational conference or something, and the speaker says something and you're like, oh yeah, I want to do that. You write it down in your notes, but just because you wrote it down in your notes and you had that thought in your mind, yes, I'm going to go home and do this, does not mean you're going to go home and do that. You actually have to create neural pathways in the brain to rewire your brain to do that thing. And then for young people whose brains are still developing, meditation is a strategy to actually wire their brains into and create healthy strategies for them, so that when they go through life, they're not living in a state of panic and anxiety in whatever situations they're experiencing. So meditation is the ability to rewire your brain, or to wire it in helpful and giving you helpful strategies that you can use. For in sophrology, the strategies that we use can be used anytime, anywhere, because it's all happening within you, so, or with your being, your physical body, or your mental capacity, or the energy that you have within you. So
what
all
is
of
it?
Your answers,
Lani. I wanted to leap in because, well, I mean, what is it about meditation that, I mean, you're talking about neuroplasticity, I guess, but what is it about meditation that enables that? I mean, do we understand what, or do we just know it works?
There is an understanding of it. So basically, what's happening is in meditation, you're moving into a space. So like in sophrology, there's three different levels of meditation. The first level of meditation is to take you, is to move you into a liminal state. So that's a space where, you're clear. You've moved into, like on a cloudy day, the clouds open up and all of a sudden there's sunlight shining into a space of clarity and you can see better.
Yeah.
And so we do. So level one is about moving you into that space of clarity. Once you're in the space of clarity, you now can envision or imagine different aspects of life. Like if you want to be a better soccer player, we'll say,
yep.
Since I have five boys that play soccer. If you want to be a better soccer player, then you imagine yourself being a better soccer player, and you imagine the strategies that you want to create for yourself. And you imagine, you know, the height of emotion in the game that you're playing and in scoring the goal and everyone around cheering and the sound of that and what it sounds like. And so when you're doing that, the body does not know that you're in a state of imagination. The body thinks you're actually doing it because you're thinking it.
Right, and all so it does, creating, it just exists in that thinking world that's where the brain right. is. Yeah,
exactly. So you're creating fresh neural pathways. So in level one, we're making space to create a new pathway. In level two, we're actually creating that pathway. And it's like, so I use the example always of you're standing at the beginning of where you're trying to make a new trail through a forest.
Yeah.
And all you have in front of you are trees. And so you're having to go in there and get and manicure a new trail and move trees out of the way and lay down a pathway and, you know, push through that. And that it's not like you can, it's not a one and done sort of thing. You're can, you know, it's something that takes effort and consistency, and then you have to maintain it, because if you don't maintain it, then the trees and the bushes just come back over and grow back over the trail that you've created. So that's how I would describe building neural pathways in the brain, is creating a space of clarity where now I'm ready to actually do my work. I'm going to go in here now and start moving the trees out of the way.
And sophrology has the meditation, like designed meditation techniques to get people to those different levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first, so a sophrology exercise is anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes long. The first level one is balanced breathing, doing a body scan, doing tension release, which is progressive muscle relaxation, tensing the muscles and then releasing. And then doing some sophro-energizing, where you're bringing energy into the body, the universal energy that's around you, you're bringing that into the body. And then we actually do gentle movement during the exercise. So we don't want to sleep in meditation. We actually want to be clear and awake in yep. in a transitional state. So in that liminal state is where we want to move ourselves into. And so doing some gentle movement in the exercise engages you with your body. So now you can identify physical sensation. Like we might just walk in place. So you're actually moving your legs back and forth, and you're intentionally noticing the shift of weight or movement between your left and right hip and how that feels. Because when you're walking around, you're not paying attention to that, right?
Yeah.
But when in meditation, you're actually paying attention to it, and you're creating that neural pathway in the brain, so that you might be out walking around one day and all of a sudden your hip clicks and the brain says, hey, there's something different going on here. And you notice it instantly. And so that's why we have various different gentle movement strategies, focusing on different parts of the body, noticing the physical sensation, so that we can be tuned in. We learn how to listen to the body and what the body is telling us, especially because when we get into those stressful states, we can immediately notice that the body's in stress, and we can immediately shift into a breathing strategy that helps to calm the body.
Okay. And these are all strategies that you teach as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. I keep interrupting. I interrupted you a while ago. I probably took you off on a different path. If we can find our way back to where you were wanting to go, that would be the plan.
Basically, if we go back and look at, that beginning thought that we had where we're thinking, oh, I want to make a change. So we actually, there's three states and levels of consciousness that we can identify, or that Kei Sato identified for the human experience. And that first level is, in sophrology, it's called pathological. In Māori, we might call it Māori moi, where we're asleep. So Māori is life force, and your life force is asleep. You're inactive, you're unaware of what's going on. You're in a space of basically dark confusion where you don't know that you don't know. And then we have this ordinary state of consciousness where this is where we spend most of our life. it in the Māori framework, you might call it Māori oho, where the life force is awake. There's a spark of life going on there. You're somewhat aware of your surroundings. You might, you know, as I said, when you're in a space of listening to a motivational speaker and you recognize the need for transition, something needs to change here, but you're not really sure of what that transition is or even how to make the change. You just know you need to make a change. So that's an ordinary state of consciousness. That's usually when the people that I work with are in that state. They're wanting to make a change, but they don't know what it is. So yeah. I work with people in discovery spaces where we go in and we do some discovery to identify, okay, what is that change that you're wanting to make? Or, you know, people come to me and they say, I'm going to get on a plane in 3 days and I'm petrified. Haven't yep. been on a plane for this long. My body isn't healthy enough. My mind isn't clear. I'm not sure I can get on the plane and fly, you know, 15 hours over to the States. So we settle them into a space where they can feel comfortable and feel confident that they can get on that plane. So that's where I, you know, most people are coming to me with things that they're wanting to change or recognizing I need to change something. I don't know what it is. So then we work together and we figure out what it is.
Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
Nope.
You were saying to me off the air that you were taking some, was it Māori language classes or something like that, and that you've been integrating that into your sophrology?
Yeah. So I actually have been at the Te Wānanga taking a course called what is it in English? It's called the Certificate of Adult Tertiary Training.
Yeah.
So I'm just getting a certificate for adult teaching, teaching adults.
Yeah.
And it's because it's at the Te Wānanga, we use the kaupapa, the foundation of Māori frameworks, Māori values, looking at things from a from that perspective, an Indigenous perspective. And as I've been taking this course, because I'm a sophrologist and I also have a degree in communication, I've just been able to apply the Māori worldviews to all of my life learnings.
Yeah,
I guess. So I've created a program which is based off of Te Whaki, which Te Whaki is a Māori health model that was created by Rose Petty in the late 90s. And her philosophy was that every living thing is cohesive. We're all offspring of divine parents, and we all have that flowing energy that is rebounding and reflecting off of each other. And that we need to learn how to live in a state of cohesion and be united in our efforts. And so she took the octopus and symbolized it, identifying the head and the eyes, and then taking all of the tentacles and attaching a different framework to each tentacle, and basing on, and then just creating a whole, strategy. Her specialty was in teaching children, and so that was mainly the reason why she did it, was for teaching children.
She used the octopus as a metaphorical thing.
Yeah.
But generally what you've described there does sound very similar to sophrology, and that sort of sense of conscious unity that you talk about.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, is that it's all, Te Whaki is a whole person strategy, just like sophrology is.
Yeah.
Focused on the mind, your physical well-being, your spiritual well-being, your relationship with others, the breath of life, the life force. So all of these different things, which is what we use in sophrology. So if I'm teaching sophrology or Te Whaki, they're one and the same. They work together.
It sounds like just about every culture that's ever been has whole person strategies for health, except for Western science. Maybe I don't know, but there seems to be a pattern I'm picking up.
Yes, that's true. Although some strategies and some cultures of some of the Eastern strategies don't focus so much on grounding in the body.
Okay.
There's some that are focused on ethereal, floating, you know, being in that space of that liminal space all the time, like never actually coming and grounding yourself.
Okay. Right.
I've listened to some meditations where you feel this floating energy come up through your body and it leaves your body and then you're out cosmically floating.
Oh, yes.
In space and time for the entire duration of the meditation, which doesn't help you to identify what's happening with your body.
Sounds
so
like
you're not grounding.
It sounds like a trip. It sounds like tripping, which has its own merits, so I'm not going to put it down.
But you've got to ground in your body. There's, again, the 11 systems, the 30 trillion cells within us, they're all functioning all the time. And if we're not consciously living to take care of our health and well-being, we're not making healthy choices with our food and drinks. We're not making healthy choices with what our ears are doing or what our eyes are seeing. If we're not doing that, then we're actually disabling the systems of the body to actually do what they're supposed to be, what they know they should be doing.
Yeah.
And so if the systems of the body perceive a threat or a danger, they're going to heighten and create an overwhelming amount of cortisol for your body, which will increase your blood pressure, increase your heart rate, and cause all of your systems of the body to be on high alert all the time, which actually is the state of existence we tend to live in 24/7. It's really bad for us.
Yeah. Let's go back to the start then, and now that we've talked through all this, and the starting question, one of the starting questions, which is why do we do meditation? Let's go through that again. Now that we've got all this info,
We meditate to create change and transformation. So it's you identify the need for change. You recognize I need to change something. But then you also recognize, okay, this is going to take a little bit of time and I need to learn how to do it and I need to rewire my brain. You're in charge. You are in charge of your thoughts. You get to switch from what is beneficial for you and what is non-beneficial or what is non-beneficial. You can move into a space of creating a beneficial thought process. You don't have to respond to negative emotions in a negative way. You don't have to respond to the anger and frustration you're feeling. The reason we meditate is so that you can identify, oh, I'm feeling angry right now and I'm about to explode. So you're going to destroy your relationships. You're going to increase your heart rate. You're going to increase your blood pressure. So it's about immediately recognizing that, identifying what is the most helpful way for me to move forward. So you're going to identify the response. So meditation is about responding, learning how to respond to life rather than react to it. And responding in a way that creates health and well-being for you and the people around you.
I think a lot of people will hear you say that we can control our thoughts, and they'll be feeling, well, look, I have, you know, sometimes you get that runaway train situation and I want to control my thoughts and I can't. But what I'm kind of picking up from you is you can't just wish it into action and like now I'm in control. You need to, like, meditation is a process that takes a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
It's not a push button thing.
It's not. That's the thing that frustrates people, because we live in this world where it's click and play or tap and purchase, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And that's not how the brain works. It's not how meditation works. It's not a reality. if you want to accomplish something, I mean, think about any sport that you've ever tried to do or any musical instrument you've ever tried to play. I mean, look at your job. Did you walk into your job the first day and click right in and all of a sudden you're just doing it?
No.
Clearly not.
No. No, and I train lots of people too, and I definitely see that pattern that most people don't just click into, although age makes a big difference. I will say that.
Yeah, it definitely does. Age makes a difference for life experience. Age can make a difference in regards to life experience. It gives you more understanding of the process of things. Age makes a difference when you're learning something new as far as learning a language or learning an instrument, because as I said, children are wiring the brain. Adults are rewiring the brain. So we have to take our life experience and determine, is this useful for this project that I'm going to do right now, or is it not useful? And which, you know, what do I need to pull in from my past learnings and what do I need to just leave in the storage box and not use right now? And so, yeah, that's the whole point of meditation. The reason that people... it doesn't look glamorous. It doesn't look sexy, you know, sitting there in a chair. You know, you can't Instagram yourself meditating. It's not entertaining. you're just sitting there watching a person with their eyes closed. You know, you have no idea. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff going on in the mind, but you have no idea. You can't see it from the outside. And that's why meditation is not, it's not a first go-to, because you can't like take a picture of it and post on your social media and say, guess what? I've just taken up a practice of meditation and I'm going to learn how to meditate and here's me doing it.
I think the way people do that is they make themselves look beautiful and then they sit in a fantastic setting and assume that, is it the lotus position, the cliched?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's how you do it. More usefully, I think, is the platform YouTube, where I know it is full to the brim with different types of meditation and, mm-hmm. you know, led meditations and all sorts of things like that. And I know that you also you've made quite a few meditations, haven't you?
I have a lot of different meditations. And when I work with people one-to-one, we personalize them and customize them to their need, because you're trying to imagine your creative, positive future. And everyone has their own perception of what that is. There are times where I've worked with a client and said, write it down, you know, write out three sentences for me that I can actually use in a meditation for you. And I build those into the narration and I speak them as if they're speaking it themselves. So it's actually in their words.
Yeah.
And I'm just guiding them through it. So they're listening to a guided meditation in a liminal state. And it's the words that they actually wrote themselves.
Right. So, that's actually interesting that you're like handcrafting meditations for people as well.
Yeah. Well, it's necessary. I mean, everybody has their the thing with life experience is that it's all personal, right? We don't perceive anything the way that anyone else does, because no one in life has identical life experience. And so everything has to be personalized. And that's the other aspect of sophrology, is that even in group facilitation, when I'm working with people and we do a meditation, all of us together, and then we have a discussion and conversation after, and everyone will have had a different experience and picked up something different. And that's based on the needs that their body is speaking to them, or their imagination, or where it took them, what their intentions are, what they're trying to accomplish with the meditative strategies. It's all different for everyone. The experience is different for everyone. And that's part of the reason why people, when someone says, I'm doing sophrology, and you say, oh, what is that? And they're like, and yeah. they can't explain it.
It's a 5-minute elevator speech.
Yeah. So the other aspect of what we do is that in those meditations, like I talked about balanced breathing, the body scan, the vital sulfur energizing, the gentle movement, all of those things, you can actually, there's tips and techniques and strategies that are built into those meditations where you will actually use them in daily life, like a breathing strategy or a gentle movement that, oh, right now I need this. And you don't have to go like, oh, I need to go sit down and do the entire 20-minute meditation just so I can use this one technique. Over a period of time, once you've strategized and you've built those neural pathways, now you've got them all in a storage box in your brain, and you can just pick and choose the ones that you need in the moment.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's sort of like when you're playing soccer, you know all the skills, and you know which ones you need to use in certain moments. And that's kind of what we do with sophrology. We do the meditations over and over and over and over again until now we've committed them to memory. And now you can be like, oh, I need this one from this meditation, yeah, or I just need this technique right now. So
it's interesting.
Yeah,
that thing
meditation. You could call meditation a sport, I guess, or.
Well, it's the same thing going on, because it's what's going on in the head, and it's interesting, this wiring of the brain. I've been doing this job now for 10 years, and a little while ago I was quite tired, and I was like, I want to bring more energy to my voice. Like I had a post-viral fatigue or something, not necessarily from COVID, but I was like, I'm gonna sit upright and sort of open my chest out a bit. But the habits of grabbing the microphone in the left hand and the mouse in the right hand and preparing to talk on the radio is so ingrained in me that I 90% of the time I couldn't get myself into a new position. It just, especially as my brain was starting to look at words that I was going to read out, I just couldn't get myself to do it. It was I'd have to go to a different studio and build new habits. And the other thing I've also found is I got interviewed by another DJ the other day, and I found it incredibly unsettling because I felt like the conversation was getting wildly out of control, because normally I'm kind of, while I'm interviewing you, my brain, at the back of my brain, I'm always thinking about where's the interview going and what are we going to do next and all that sort of thing. Like all this meta stuff is going on at the same time, but sitting there in front of another microphone without my headphones on, it just felt like wildly out of control.
Yeah, exactly. And that's because you've got these neural pathways in the brain, and now the brain is doing something new in a familiar space.
Yes.
So you're in a familiar space, but your brain isn't doing what it's been trained to do. And that's causing a little bit of stress and anxiety for you.
Yeah.
And so that's when you reach for that breathing strategy, because you can calm yourself in that moment. You can be like, no, I'm not. This is a different setting. I don't need to be doing what I normally should be doing. And therefore, I can calm myself right now and be present for this interview when I am now the interviewee rather than the interviewer.
Yes.
And you can change that. And you have that ability to again, respond clearly and cognitively to a situation rather than being like, wait, I'm usually the interviewer. And then your stress starts tightening. And so you're giving into the stress.
Yeah.
So it's all about you switching that thought process and saying, no, I'm in charge right now. I can choose to not be stressed and to be present for this interview. That's how it works when we're creating those pathways.
Does this also mean that if you're going to meditate, you probably shouldn't do it at the same desk that you do your work at, for instance?
You can? Because you can close your eyes and imagine that you're doing it differently. So
okay, all right.
That's easy. Yeah, I mean, so I'll start a sophrology exercise. You might be sitting in, it's normally you're sitting upright in a chair, a dining room, an office chair. And so I start the exercise, you go through the whole series of the exercise of 20 minutes. And at the end of the exercise, we do what we call, so this is level 3, which we didn't get to, which is called desophronization. So this is moving back into the awake state with greater clarity and motivation. And you're identifying the space and the energy around you in a new way. So now you're actually coming out of that state, and you've now moved from where you were, because you've started building that pathway into the forest. So you're 100 feet or yards or meters or whatever they say in New Zealand.
Yes, both
into the forest. And so you're not back at the beginning again. You've started moving ahead. So you can come out of that space, and you're looking at your computers and your microphone and your mouse in a totally different way, because you've just meditated it into a different strategy.
Right. Okay. So all right. Let's wrap this up by telling people where they can find out a little bit more and where some of your meditations are, because we're getting quite a different different look at how meditation works, how these these different levels and why you're doing it, and what you need to make it work for you.
Yeah, so my website. So my company is called Sophro Solis. So Sophro is spelled S-O-P-H-R-O. So SophroSolis.com. And they can have a look at my website. They can also go to just email me, SophroSolis@gmail.com. Social media is not my...
Yes.
They can go have a look at Sophro Solis if they want to. But that's a space where I need to grow and develop. I'll just say that.
I thought Karamia was going to help you with this, but I guess she's got some little kids to look after these days, so maybe not so much.
Yeah, she has. Time in her life. She's actually been helping me with designing my programs, and she designed my logo.
Cool.
My kids. My website looks the way it does because of my children. I'll just say that.
Okay, I'm googling it now.
Adult children. Yeah. Yes, I have wonderful adult children who help me stay on brand.
Right. Are they good at that?
Yeah, they're very good at that. So I take advantage of their, you know, some people aspire to have children who are doctors or dentists or whatever. And I'm like, I have children who are brand experts, design experts. So they help me look nice on the internet.
That's good. That's very important these days. Very important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Lani, thank you for talking to us this morning. And folks, if you tuned in halfway through, we've been talking about meditation, and I've got a podcast this, so you'll be able to pick it up later on today at RagnarRadio.com. And Lani, we'll talk to you again in a few weeks.